British explorer and political officer Gertrude Bell was arguably one of the most influential women in the Middle East at the turn of the 20th century, but as a documentary film called Letters from Baghdad reveals, she's often written out of history. Filmmakers Ziva Oldbaum and Sabina Krayenbuhl reveal her role in shaping the modern Middle East. The film, which has won numerous awards, is currently at the Angelika and Village East Cinemas, and I'm very pleased to welcome Ziva Oldbaum and Sabina Krayenbuhl to our show. Hi.
Hi. Thank
nice
you.
To be here.
What was Gertrude Bell's life like as a young woman in Britain before she moved to the Middle East?
Well, she was born to a wealthy industrialist family in the north of England, but she suffered a tragedy when she was very young. Her mother died when she was 3 years old. She had a very close relationship with her father, and she was constrained by all of the Victorian mores of the time.
But she went to Oxford. Wasn't that a rarity?
Totally. I mean, she was only one of three women that finished with a first in modern history. They didn't even actually graduate. Women didn't graduate. And it was a time when women had to actually turn around in the classroom and face their professors with their backs because the professor couldn't handle looking women in the face.
So how did she wind up in the Middle East?
Well, she was, after she graduated Oxford, it's really interesting that her family encouraged her to visit her uncle, who was ambassador to Persia, to get rid of her Oxfordy manner. And she ended up really falling in love with the East.
And what was its special appeal for her? Because if women were relatively downgraded in England, in the Middle East, they were pretty much powerless.
Well, she felt that the Middle East was more tolerant overall. And in a way, for her, this was also it opened up a certain kind of freedom. She fell in love with the archaeological site. She early on started to really be interested and draw plans of archaeological sites. And so it was a combination of the geography of the region, but also the peoples of the Middle East.
Now, the film is called Letters from Baghdad, and that's because you use letters and documents that Bell and her colleagues wrote as a way of narrating the story. You have,
yes,
Tilda Swinton speaking for Gertrude Bell. Not bad.
Yes, yes. She is absolutely fantastic, and was always our first choice, of course, to read the letters. Gertrude Bell left 1,600 letters in the archives at Newcastle University, where her archives live.
Today you wouldn't have anything like that because most of those emails would have been deleted.
Of course, yes.
Definitely.
So she left them in the archives?
Well, these are letters that she wrote to her family and her friends, and they were, of course, since donated to Newcastle after her death.
A sad part of the story involves a love affair with a married man.
Yes, very racy. Mm-hmm. Yes, she fell in love with man named Dick Doughty Wiley, who was in the military and fought at Gallipoli, and their love affair lasted as long as he lived and died eventually.
But mostly at a distance.
It was at a distance. They first met in Konya in Turkey, and it was a letter relationship for the longest period, but then they met on and off a little bit in London, but we know it was never consummated.
So the letters were a guide for collecting the archival material, the
yes,
photographs and such?
Yes. She also left, incredibly, 7,000 photographs, 7,000 photographic negatives and contact prints, which are incredibly beautiful.
She was a great photographer. She doesn't get credit as a photographer.
You're absolutely right. She doesn't, and she deserves it.
Are most of the sites that she documented still standing?
It depends. I mean, some of the sites, a lot of the sites are looted, and obviously more recently some of the sites actually were destroyed. Those were the sites, near Palmyra, or Palmyra, part of Palmyra was destroyed by ISIS, and so were sites near Mosul. But Babylon has sort of been the same since 2003. Of course, at that moment, some of these sites were also unprotected.
How did Gertrude Bell meet T.E. Lawrence, and what was her relationship with him?
She met him at Carchemish at an excavation in 1911, and he recounts a very funny sort of way that they met, where she was disapproving of their excavation methods, and so he became sort of competitive and, you know, tried to run circles around her with various topics.
Was he already famous as Lawrence of Arabia?
No. But what was interesting about that site was it was right next to the Baghdad-Berlin Railway. And so obviously what we have, one of the things we've learned in doing the film is really the connection between archaeologists and then later on becoming intelligence officers. So that's an interesting discovery we made it during doing the film.
Has she worked for the British government before World War One?
No, she went on to a very amazing trip of 1,500 miles into the desert to Heil in Arabia, in the Nejd. And when she came back, she gave her notes and maps to the various people in the British government.
And she collected a lot of materials simply because, as a foreign woman, the men were willing to talk to her in a way that they might not have talked to a man from England, because they would have suspected that he had ulterior motives?
Yes, she was definitely much less of a threat to them. And also it was her ways. I mean, she was so honest, you know, she just stormed into the tents and had these discussions and dialogues that were very much on an equal level. She spoke their languages. And it was a very friendly exchange.
And then she remembered what others had told her, and so she could use that information to gain the trust of the new person she was talking with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I'm speaking with Sabina Krayenbuhl and Ziva Olbam, who have made a film called Letters from Baghdad. It's playing through the 30th of this month at the Angelica and the Village East cinemas. Didn't the Ottoman government think she was a spy?
Yes, we came across some telegrams in the Ottoman archives which specifically named her as being a potential spy and that her travels should be prevented.
But she wasn't a spy until she became a spy.
Yes,
precisely.
I mean, the word spy is sort of, you know, it comes with a big a load of implications. But she was basically what was called at the time an intelligence officer, but only recruited at the beginning of World War One.
How much of Lawrence's success in the Arab revolt against the Ottoman Empire can be attributed to intelligence that she gathered?
That's a great question, because we have Lawrence's direct military supervisor, General Gilbert Clayton, saying that much of his success was a result of her maps and her charts and tribal notes.
But often what she came up with was discounted simply because she was a woman?
Yes, I mean, it was hard for her. I mean, she not within the military ranks. I mean, she really was highly regarded. And at the time, she was also, became quite, not notorious, but important. There were many, many newspaper articles written about her. I think it was more the fact that, you know, how history is told and who are the people that tell the history. It's the memoirs of the men of her contemporaries that leave her out. And it's those kind of things that contribute to an eventual disappearance in history.
Did she ever write a book?
Yes, she wrote six, or possibly seven books. From the earliest one was in the 1890s about her experiences in Persia. She did a translation of Hafez poetry, which is still highly regarded today. And then she wrote an additional four or five books that are regarded.
What was her role with the British government after the fall of the Ottoman Empire?
She became what was called the Oriental Secretary in Baghdad, and was working to help form the new state of Iraq. And
was it called Iraq then? It was called Mesopotamia.
It was Mesopotamia. The Iraq was sort of a colloquial name that actually dates back very far, but we found it more and more often appearing in her letter, Al-Iraq or the Iraq, and then that was became the name.
Shortly before she moved to Baghdad, the proclamation to the people of the Wilayat of Baghdad said, "Our armies do not come into your cities and lands as conquerors or enemies, but as liberators." Haven't Western powers made similar claims as recently as the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq?
Sounds familiar, right?
We were very stunned, actually, to see that because it was deja vu, you know.
So the British were occupying Mesopotamia, now Iraq. How was she perceived by the people who she dealt with?
Well, she was actually the bridge between the Iraqis and the colonial office. She had such a close relationship with the Iraqis. She knew them from earlier trips to the region, and so she was relied upon by some of the high commissioners to really give them insight into what the people wanted. But it depended on who the high commissioner was.
What was her opinion about the occupation?
Well, I think she was the only one in the office, in the British colonial office, that actually was felt guilty about it and acknowledged the guilt of some of the ways that the British officers treated the Iraqis and the way they went about it, and she was torn by the way they went about. But ultimately, she was a product of the British colonial office.
She was strongly in favor of creating an Arab state in Iraq. At the same time, she writes to her father, "Mesopotamia is not a civilized state." Was there much concern about the Sunni-Shia divide that has played such an important role in modern Iraqi politics?
Well, she believed that the Sunnis should be in charge, even though they were a minority. She felt most...
That caused a lot of trouble later.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. The documentary is Gertrude Bell, warts and all, you know. So she was most comfortable with the Sunnis. She was herself not a religious person. She was nervous about the religious...
She was an atheist.
She was an atheist, actually. And the Shias wouldn't speak to her because she wouldn't veil, and she wouldn't veil. So It was complicated.
Emil Faisal had recently been overthrown as the king of Greater Syria in the Franco-Syrian War. She believed that Faisal should become the king of Iraq?
Yes. He was a Sunni, and he was also considered a direct descendant of Muhammad. And she felt that fact actually would bring people together of different Islamic ethnical groups. And she also favored him over his brother Abdullah, who ended up being the king to Jordan.
How long before Iraq actually became an independent country? And would its borders have been similar to what they are now?
Yes, she was particularly instrumental in drawing the southern borders of Iraq because that was the region that she knew. She knew those tribes, and she actually asked the tribes to come in and consult with her. So those were the borders that she was responsible for. Some of the other borders were confirmed after her death.
And her death is generally assumed to have been a suicide?
Yes. She was found with a bottle of pills next to her bed, and it's considered an overdose of sleeping pills. And we were fortunate enough to meet her descendants, and one of them in particular was the only one that's still around who actually met her. That's her niece in England. And the family has come to the conclusion that it was suicide.
Despite the fact that she was really involved in what was going on, was she distraught about the way things were going at the time?
It was a combination of different things. She was very involved in founding and establishing the Iraq Museum, but she had been marginalized in the colonial office. She had was very lonely because her colleagues had rotated out at that point of Baghdad. She lost a brother she was very close to. Her family's fortune had declined. It was a combination
so,
of things.
So she kills herself shortly after the opening of the Iraqi Museum, which she helped create. How should we remember her legacy? Obviously, it's a complicated one, but what do you think she would think of the state of the modern Middle East?
She would definitely be distraught over the fact that it is so splintered and the sectarian strife, although we know now that some of that is in relationship to what was created at the time. But one of the things I think we can learn from her is she was always someone really open and tolerant to other cultures. And that is something that is in today's world, that's something that's definitely important to value.
My great thanks to Ziva Olbaum and Sabina Kreienbuhl. Their film, Letters from Baghdad, will be playing at the Angelica and the Village East Cinemas through June 30th, and they will be doing a Q&A on Sunday the 25th at the Angelica. That's after the 4:45 showing. For more information about it, go to our show page at wnyc.org/lopate. Thank you both so much for being on our show.
Thank you.